Cool. I think we'll get started, guys. How's everyone doing today? Good. Awesome. My name is Jay Jonathan. I work at Microsoft. I'm managing all our student-related operations. So I engage with students. I engage with universities. And I'm basically advocating for what students want and what students want from Microsoft and the IT community. And I'd like to give you a bit of insight into Team Estimate. So I was actually Team Estimate's mentor. I traveled with them to Seattle to the Imagine Cup and was with them when they won the World Cup. And I want to give you a bit of background into how they did this. So I'm sure you guys have all seen the purple shirts in the hub the last 2 days. So they're running a program called the Microsoft Student Accelerator. So I have a question for all of you. How many of you are struggling to find skilled IT graduates? Yes, quite a few of you. So we went to universities and we asked them the same question. We went to students and we went to the lecturers and asked them, how many of you are struggling to find work? And a lot of these computer science and engineering graduates put their hands up and said, yes, we are struggling to find work. We can't find jobs. We don't have anyone in the industry. We don't have any industry mentors. And Microsoft felt that it was a really big issue for us because all these skilled IT students, all these passionate IT students couldn't find jobs in IT. And so last year we created this program called the Microsoft Student Accelerator Program. This program essentially enables students to get work experience and get placed with innovative companies over summer. These students are really passionate, and they're willing to work voluntarily over summer on innovative projects. And so Team Estimate today, they actually came through this program. So what we do is we take these students, we train them on Microsoft technology, and we place them over summer at an employer, usually a Microsoft partner. So Hayden and Jason, these two guys, they came in. They got trained on Microsoft technologies. They got trained on Azure. They got trained on Windows 8 apps, and they went and worked at the warehouse over summer. After this, they came and entered the Imagine Cup, and through the entire process, the Accelerator program has given them the skills, the confidence, and the necessary stamina to become world champions at Imagine Cup. And so these guys have essentially traveled to the United States. They've won more than $50,000 US in prize money. They're now a startup that are going to London at the end of this year to work at Microsoft Ventures over 1 month to get trained on the best from the best and the brightest at Microsoft. And all of this was made possible by the Microsoft Student Accelerator Program. So I'm sure all of your companies, you know, they're all looking for skilled graduates. We've got plenty of students looking to find work and looking for voluntary placement. So your company, there's no cost to your company. Microsoft sponsors all of these students. We provide them training, we provide them education, so they're ready to hit the ground running. The only requirement we have from you is to register interest and provide an industry mentor from your company that can help these students get used to IT and get used to the industry. So I really urge every single one of you to consider this. Talk to your boss, say, can we get 3 students over summer? That'd be pretty cool. Come talk to us in the hub. We're here for the rest of the week, and see us in the purple shirt. You can also reach out to us. I work with the developer evangelism team at Microsoft, so feel free to reach out to any of the Microsoft evangelists here. I will be happy to talk to you as well. I'm going to kick off Team Estimate by showing you a video of the Imagine Cup presentation. So I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you enjoy watching Team Estimate's journey.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome your 2014 Imagine Cup World Championship host, Kate Yeager.
The Imagine Cup's innovation category comprises of social networks, music services, digital photography apps, gadgets and robotics, the list goes on. It's about the future, and you're about to see it for yourself right here, right now. To announce our innovation winners, let's welcome back Googs.
Imagine Cup winner. In the innovation category, they also receive a $50,000 check. But in addition, we're going to do a four-week accelerator, mini version of Accelerator, through Microsoft Ventures. So you're going to join the Microsoft Ventures Accelerator in the country or location closest to you. So here we go. The number one, do we have some Kiwis in the house from Estimate? Come on up.
Fresh Kid C. Fresh Kid C. Yes, sir. Fresh Kid P.
Cool. All right, imagine this. You're meeting up with a friend at Starbucks. You've arrived, but he hasn't. What do you do? Step one, you take out your phone and you check the time. Step two, send a text. Where are you? How long will you take? Step three, well, this is when the waiting begins. Step four, by now you're thinking, oh, I've had enough. So you call him again and again until he picks up. Do you know that you're going through this process every time you're meeting up? If you think that's bad, think again. What if their phone's on silent? What if they're driving and cannot reply? And what if you have to go through these steps for 2, 6, or even 10 people? Texting and calling is not the solution. You will still be left in the dark if the other person does not reply. But you see it happening everywhere, at social gatherings, business meetings, and even at today's event. You might have noticed that one of our team members is actually missing. Hayden, is he picking up? There's got to be an easier way. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We're Team Estimate. I'm Jason, the lead presenter. Chris, who's our technical expert, unfortunately isn't here, hasn't made it yet. And Hayden, our team leader. We're very excited to introduce Estimate, the app that will redefine the way we meet. So with Estimate, your location sharing only starts at a predefined time before the event. So you're not sharing your location details 24/7. Estimate shows you how far your friends are, how long they'll take, and whether they're on their way. We've implemented a color system to show whether your friends are actually on their way. All right, now let's see how Estimate would be used in real life. After logging in, I will be brought to the main events page. Today, my friend Jane has organized a get-together at Starbucks at 6:30. This is what the Estimate page looks like 10 minutes before the event. I know I'm going to be on time, but what about my friends? Looks like Jane is already waiting for us at Starbucks. Everyone's making their way except for Oliver, who's overslept. He's also left his phone on silent. Jess is driving in, but with current traffic conditions, it seems she'll be late. So you can see here that there's no need for my friends to reply, as location sharing is triggered by time and is automatic. As the meeting starts, Estimate will show me arriving on time at Starbucks. We will still be able to see how long the others will take to arrive. So throughout this entire process, no one had to text or call to find out what the situation was. All right, now what about our friend Chris? Well, we've been running a live demo of the app throughout this presentation. Looks like he's pretty close. So the good thing about Estimate is that once you arrive at the event, your location sharing automatically stops. Hey, you made it.
Okay, Chris, we knew you were going to be late, so I took care of the slides for you.
So be more efficient with your time by using Estimate. It's originally targeted at high school and university students. So this is why we've integrated with Facebook. By logging in with your Facebook account, all your Facebook events will already be in Estimate. But don't get us wrong, though. You can still create events locally within the app. This is also a much wider market for Estimate, as you'll find out later on in our presentation. So how are we different to existing location sharing apps on the market? Well, Apple's Find My Friends and Facebook's nearby friends simply shares your location. Glimpse allows you to send a snapshot of your situation, including where you are and how long you'll take to arrive. But Estimate uses location sharing in a smarter way. It's integrated into your events and is completely automated. Although Estimate is a location sharing app, your exact user location is actually never shown to your friends. And why is that? Well, this is because our survey of 80 people found that most people do not use location sharing apps due to privacy issues. So we took out the exact user location and came up with a visual display that provided the same key information, just in a simpler way. By doing so, more people will embrace Estimate. Remember how I said that students were only part of our target market? I'm sure you'll all agree with me that business people can also benefit from less calls and text and higher productivity.
And this is where Estimate Enterprise comes in. Time is money, especially in the corporate environment. 11 million meetings happen each day in the United States alone. A few minutes wasted in each of these meetings could be big dollars down the drain. In fact, study shows that 10 minutes is spent up on distractions, which an app can minimize. But how can we make it easier for businesses? As business meetings are often created through email, they simply need to add Estimate onto the recipient field. Once the email is sent, our Exchange server automatically processes this by creating a new event and inviting those users on Estimate. Simple as that. Local businesses we've spoken to were very interested in improving their productivity by using our app, as it is simple and easy to use. But how does our app really work? When location sharing starts, the app sends its geolocations to the cloud using WCF services. This information is processed and stored on the SQL database and simultaneously pushed out to your friends. We chose Azure for our back-end solution as it was scalable, as there are data centers around the world, and compatible across different mobile platforms. So, what's our plan from here onwards? We'll first develop the app onto the three major mobile platforms, as well as developing Estimate Enterprise. As native development is costly in terms of time and money, we'll be using Xamarin as our cross-platform development tool. We will then conduct close testing on each of these platforms. Following the likes of these social apps in the early stages, we've decided that Estimate for Friends will be a free app with no ads, locked features, or restrictions. After we launch Estimate Social, we aim to get insight into meeting behavior and trends from people around the world. Information like this could be of huge value to businesses and how they run their meetings. So, how much will this all cost us? Our main cost will be in employment, advertising, and Azure. After consulting an Azure expert at Microsoft, we projected that for every 200,000 increase in social user, there will be an increase in Azure cost by at most $200 a month. But to sustain our cost in the long run, however, our corporate segment is to meet enterprise, or target large corporations for revenue. But how do we approach them? We figured we couldn't just walk up to them knocking on their doors. So we'll form strategic partnerships with IT vendors to leverage their sales channel. So we'll license our technology to firms such as Datacom to integrate into their business package to their enterprise customers. And we'll license this at $5 per user per month. In New Zealand, there are 2,000 large enterprises. If we just get 5% of this market, this is $1 million in annual revenue. At the end of the sixth year, we aim to get 60% on board. And when we do, this will be $15 million in annual revenue. So our initial growth phase requires venture capital of $5 million across 3 years, which will be used to cover our cost. After this period, we'll have enough licenses from Estimate Enterprise to become financially sustainable. Estimate Social and Enterprise work together. The revenue generated from the enterprise side financially support the social, and the analytical data extracted from the social along with the enterprise provide better decision-making information for business people.
So what you've seen today is just the beginning of Estimate. We can only imagine the potential of large-scale data from our users around the world and how it can revolutionize business meetings. Cortana integration and a leaderboard system are also exciting features we'll have in the near future. So why not start every meeting with Estimate, the app that will redefine the way we meet? Thank you. So that was the exact same presentation we did to the judges in Seattle for the World Finals. And yes, he did actually run in through the entire presentation in the middle of everything. So yeah, I would just like to open up. Maybe do you guys have some questions at this stage?
Yes. Yep, so what we're trying to do with Estimate Enterprise is give you all the data that you need to better utilize your time. So if you're actually at a meeting and you find that other people are going to be about half an hour late, you can just start working on something else. You can start reading about the what you're going to talk about in the meeting. So all we're doing is giving you the information to better utilize this time.
But we had some, the Estimate Enterprise, questions about that came up a lot during the World Finals. And after talking with judges, it was recommended that we stick with our social user base first, because there's a lot of complications around like businesses. Because most business meetings, people are late, you start anyway, right? So we're working on the social side first, and we'll see what we can develop further to help with the enterprise side. Cool. See, any other questions?
Have you used the so right now it's on the Windows Phone, and it's on closed beta testing right now. But we're going to develop it on iOS and Android before rolling them out all together. So we're going to do a global launch. We hope to have that done by March next year. Yes? Yep, so for the social side, we're looking into Facebook marketing. So since our target audience is teenagers and high school students, we'll be targeting the channel that they use, so it's Facebook, as well as word of mouth through friends.
Cool. All right, so we'll go forward with our journey to here.
So now you've seen the presentation we did at the World Finals. Yes, now I just wanted to explain to you how we got here, so our 6 months journey leading up to the finals. In particular, how the team was formed. So basically, the team was formed through the Microsoft Student Accelerator Program, like Jay said, which I participated in at the end of last year. So basically, the accelerator program connects students with industry experts to help them gain work experience and skills over the break, to help them work on actual products, actual projects with real companies. So through this program, I was working with five other university students at the warehouse, working on an internal human resource application, a web application. So one of the team members in the team was actually Chris, so our technical expert. And it was also from this program where I got to know about the Imagine Cup and was encouraged to enter. So at first, I didn't really know much about the Imagine Cup, but what really encouraged me to take part was seeing how well the teams did in the past, the New Zealand teams, and the opportunities that opened up for them. So Imagine Cup was something different that I could do rather than just going to attending lectures and doing assignments and just university work. And it was something really different. And the fact that it was New Zealand's biggest IT competition didn't really hurt either. So even though I didn't have any good ideas to begin with, I just decided to give it a go and just enter. And I sort of persuaded Chris to join me. So Jason and Derek joined the team, and Team Estimate was really formed. I think the team was a really good mix. Chris here was really good in the technical side, so he had good front and back end skills. Jason wasn't from a computer science background, but I knew him for a long time, and he had good presentation and business skills. So when I first asked the guys to join in, they weren't very keen, and I was a bit skeptical too. Would I be able to come up with any good ideas? Could we even make an app that was good enough for the competition? But I took the opportunity, just gave it a go, and it was one of the best decisions I've ever made. So now you know how the team was formed. Now I'll pass it over to Jason, who'll talk about the competition process and how the idea was developed over time.
Cool, so we had four main stages. We had the preliminary rounds and the national finals, both of which was held at the University of Auckland. Then we had the World Semifinals, which was an online submission process that reduced 170 teams worldwide to just 34, which made it to the World Finals in Seattle. There's three categories: World Citizenship, Games, and Innovation, with just over 10 teams competing for each category at the World Finals. So now I'll head into how our idea actually developed over time. So the innovation category is a relatively new category in Imagine Cup history. So we decided to tackle this and look into a problem which is really widespread, and then that one that everyone can relate to. And that's really difficult. As you would have heard from the keynote seminar earlier on this week, there's just about an app for everything these days. So we were really stuck. So the first few meetings we had were very frustrating. And it wasn't just frustrating because we couldn't come up with something to start off with. It was also because we couldn't even have a proper meeting where we didn't wait for someone for half an hour from the start. So that was really the problem. I think that was the spark that sparked everything. It was just waiting for people. And that's something that everybody experiences every day. So we went ahead with this. And initially, our concept was pretty simple. You would see yourself on a map and your friends and how to get there in the quickest time. Our reasoning was, if you can see that your friends have started making their way to the meeting, chances are you won't be waiting very long when you arrive there. So that's how we pitched it to Jay and Mohit, our two mentors at the boot camps leading up to national finals. And yeah, pretty quickly, after about three hours, we found out there were many flaws with this idea. So like that gentleman said, basically, the people who would use this app, obviously, they don't like waiting for other people. So they won't start leaving for the event unless they see their friends to start leaving for the event, right? So we have this situation where everyone's waiting for somebody else to start making their way to the meeting location. So we get no meeting in the end, or a meeting that starts 3 hours late. So, yeah, that was it. That was a problem. So we went back to the drawing board, and we really liked the path of where we're going down, something to do with meeting up, because that's something that we do every day. But we need a new clear target problem. And after a few hours, we came up with this. It's the time and frustration of contacting your friends who haven't arrived. That's something people experience a lot. And basically, it covers all these common questions that we ask our friends when they aren't here. So what did that mean? That meant we needed an instant, real-time data on our friends when we're meeting up with them. And we need that data even when our friends are too busy to reply to us. So there we met another problem. People didn't want to share their location details all the time. So how can we respect people's privacy while allowing our app to perform and deliver its value proposition, which is delivering up-to-date and instant data on our friends? So there we implemented the event-triggered, event-based location sharing. So we already covered that earlier in our presentation. So what happens is you only share your details from, say, 10 minutes before the meeting up until you arrive. So it's a very short duration, but it's the time where it provides the maximum value to your friends. We also decided to remove the map interface because the truth is your friends don't need to know exactly where you are, and they probably don't want to either. All they want to know is how long they have to wait for you to arrive. So this was the process that we went through in developing Estimate. You can see it wasn't exactly very clear-cut and very smooth ride. So I'll just pass it on to Chris, who will talk about some of the difficulties we had along the way.
Okay. On the technical side, the hardest part is at the beginning. When we decided to do this app, I thought this is going to be an easy one, because all we need is to get friends' location data, do some easy calculation, and display on the list. How hard can this be? But right after we start doing this, I think I was underestimated the difficulties of this project. As a new graduate with a bachelor's degree in computer science, the only working experience I've had is by participating in the Microsoft Student Accelerator Program, where I worked 10 weeks as an intern software developer. This experience gives me some insight into how different technologies work together, like WCF, Microsoft SQL Server, ADO.NET Entity Framework, C#, and Visual Studio Online. Actually, these technologies are the foundations we used for our app estimate. But when it comes to the real building process, we're still facing a lot of challenges, like how to manage a large group of users to interact with each other simultaneously, and how to structure our code to make it more extendable and easy for debugging. Something interesting happened right after we start building this app. After our idea is finalized, we spent days on design and planning for this project. When I started writing the code, I was stuck on the very first function that I really thought is going to be easy one. That's how to add friend. Because at that stage, none of us knows what push notification works. So we literally can't start. But Microsoft is really helpful here. One of the MSP, Jay, has helped us a lot at the beginning on the technical side to get me started working on this. And after we went to national finals, Microsoft MVP, Mohit, helped us a lot on the project in general. Without these two guys, we would probably not be able to make it to World Finals in Seattle. So what's our plan next? After the World Finals, we decided to rewrite our app. For the server side, we're going to use RESTful WCF services that running on Microsoft Azure Virtual Machine that provides APIs for client application like Windows Phone, Android, and iOS. So far, the server side is already finished. Between now and the end of this year, we'll be focusing on Android development. We are aiming at the release a beta version for internal testing at the end of this year. If everything works fine, we are expecting to release our full version for three major mobile platforms at March of next year. I'm grateful for the experiences that I had for participating in this competition. I truly learned a lot from it. I'll hand the mic back to Hayden to talk about our next step.
Yep, so what's next for us? So it's been about a month since we came back from Seattle. We've been very busy talking to businesses and planning our next step. As part of the winning the innovations category, we get to go to Microsoft Ventures at the end of the year in London to participate in the Accelerator program. So the Ventures Accelerator program will give us mentoring, training, and connections to other startups. The guidance and skills we learn from this program is going to be really valuable when we launch Estimate off the ground. So in general, Microsoft Imagine Cup not only gave us the opportunity to come up with innovative ideas, but actually go through with it and follow through with it and make it into an actual product that people could use. So it's the three of us on stage today, but we definitely wouldn't have made it this far or would be here talking to you without the people that helped us out. So I'd just like to say a thanks to a few people. So the team at Microsoft New Zealand, Ryan over there, and Gabriella, Mohit and Kerry from Datacom, as well as Jay and Ming, Microsoft student partners. And with that, we come to an end of this presentation, and we'll be very happy to get any feedback and suggestions from you, and you can get in touch with us just after this session, or you can contact us through these channels. Thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed this presentation.
Talking to you about the three secrets that we learned to save the kiwi. But just before I start revealing those secrets to you, I want to introduce you to somebody special. So this is Billy the Kiwi. And just like all of us, he's had a fairly standard upbringing where he's had kind, loving parents that have helped him to develop. Can you hear me?
Yep.
All right, carry on. Yeah, so he's grown up a pretty normal life, but there's one thing that troubles him. Every day in his life, he doesn't know whether he'll live another day. He doesn't know whether his family will live to see another day. That is because in New Zealand right now, out of every 20 Kiwi that live out in the wild, only one makes it to the age where makes it to adulthood, let alone breeding age. And this is pretty terrible. I mean, the Kiwi, that's the identity that we have as New Zealanders. And so what is it that poses a threat to the Kiwi? What is it that makes this statistic so horrific? I can tell you right now, it's not this dude, but as scary as he is, the real threat that we have here are these guys. These are the baddies. This is the rat, the stoat, and the possum. They are the three most deadly pests and predators for the kiwi right now. And not only the kiwi, also for all the other native birds that we have throughout New Zealand forest. These pests, they sneak into the nest and they steal the eggs. They prey on the other birds while they're sleeping. They destroy habitats and destroy the nests. It's horrific. And right now in New Zealand, we deal with this issue with one of two methods. The main way we deal with this is with poison. And unfortunately, poison is effective at controlling pest populations, but it's also extremely effective at culling the animals that we're trying to protect. The second method we have is this here. This is a trap. This is the DOC 200. It's basically a giant glorified mouse trap. The way it works is you chuck in an egg or some fresh rabbit meat, and the pest comes in, the pest is trapped. And for a period of either 3 to roughly 30 days, that pest stays in the trap until somebody physically walks out to the forest, checks it, and takes it out. And so this particular method of trapping really isn't that effective. Firstly, it's extremely difficult to set up and maintain. It requires a person to physically go out to the forest once a month, take this big box, stick it down in the forest, set the trap, make sure it works. And it's also difficult in that someone also has to, a ranger has to come and visit this trap again and again, hike out to the forest, take the bait, remove the pests that have been caught, etc. It's also inaccurate. And this is a big issue because this trap, just like poison, has been known to catch the animals that we're trying to protect. And so that's really not helping us in any way. Now, while this trap is very cheap to build, it's just some wood and some mesh and a little bit of spring action, the total operating cost over a period of time is extremely expensive. It's that man hours required to actually physically go out, check the traps, fix them up, make sure everything's good. Now, as a New Zealander, well, I'm really proud to be a New Zealander. And while we might not be the best in the Olympics or the Commonwealth Games, something that we are the best at is coming up with ideas. And there's a company down in Wellington called Good Nature, and they've done just that. They put their minds together and targeted this problem that we have in conservation. Because in the past, conservation really hasn't had the attention that all the other industries have with technology. I mean, we're still using traps, like mouse traps, and they were developed years ago. And so this is the future. This here is called the Good Nature A24 trap. And it's amazing. It's revolutionary. And it overcomes a lot of the major downfalls that we have with the current method. Firstly, it's humane. This trap has been tested around the world and adheres to the highest humane standards that we have. It's also cheap. Not cheap as in it will break, but cheap as in cheap to purchase and to maintain. And it's also specifically targeted towards the pests that we're trying to catch. In fact, with the studies they've done, 0% of non-targeted animals were killed with these traps. So we went out to the industry, and we have heard a lot of buzzwords in the last couple of years with big data and the cloud and all these amazing things that are within our grasp now. And what we wanted to know was, how can we harness that power to help conservation? How can we bring that technology to them, bring them up to the future? Because right now, they're still in the dark ages. And the two overwhelming responses that we got were, firstly, that we have no insight. We don't know right now
what our traps are doing. We probably won't know for another 30 days. And by then, we might have another 20,000 rats. And that's going to be destructive. The other point that we found was that we can't see the impact of our efforts. We don't know where we need to refocus. And so we took these two statements and we internalized that and turned that into ohiti. Ohiti is taken from the Māori word, which means to be cautious, alert, vigilant, and watchful. Ohiti is the watchful eye on New Zealand's wildlife. And it's broken into two major components. The first of which is the ohiti sensor. You probably can't see it from here. I'll show it on the document projector in a second. But it's basically a microcontroller that sits on each of the traps in the forest, and it monitors a lot of information. We can get things like the temperature, the humidity. We monitor the times that the traps actually fire, when they need to be maintained, because this is all information that we can use to be proactive in conservation. And the second part is the Ohiti Cloud. And that's basically our application that just runs on Azure and processes this massive amount of telemetry. So I'm just going to give you a bit of a demo. So what I need you to do, I need you all to pretend to be trees. We're in the forest right now. What I've done is I've placed a sensor out in the audience, just a test one. I'm not going to set the trap off right here. It's quite alarming. But I'll just let this start up. What I'm going to show you is that, it's not very clear, but the wireless data from the mesh network running in this room right now can be broadcasted through the mesh and then received on this device here. So text isn't that easy to read, but go for it. So I'm not sure if you can really read that, but if you saw the lights flash, go again. Just look here. So each time that flashes, that's packets flying around wirelessly. That's nothing new for us. I mean, Wi-Fi's been around for years, Bluetooth's been around. But one big part of our project that we discovered quickly was that trees and water and forests do not like Wi-Fi. They do not like Bluetooth. They do not like a lot of other wireless technologies that we have right now. And so we had to overcome that. And part of our project was developing this meshing protocol that discovers nodes, discovers other traps, and then rebuilds a network dynamically. So this gave us the means to actually get our data out of the forest. Okay. One of the major constraints that we set for ourselves in this project was that we wanted to be cloud first. The cloud is the future, we've been hearing that for years, and so we really wanted to embrace that. So if there was a technology that could be run in the cloud, we're running it in the cloud. The first of which was with Visual Studio Online. So are there any developers in here? That's good, okay. Is anyone actually using Visual Studio Online? Or any Git or SVN? Cool. Well, Visual Studio Online, when we started using this, was in preview. It's basically a code repository where you can all work on your code together, submit it, keep it in one place. You can go back and check different versions. But the biggest benefit for us was that we were able to collaborate, discuss the changes, because we all didn't work together in the same place. We were quite distributed as a team. So that was one of the main benefits. But something that really made it hit home for us was its integration with Microsoft Azure. Our whole project runs on Azure. So whenever I submit code from my laptop, my desktop, wherever, this code gets pushed into Visual Studio Online, which is then tested, make sure the code actually runs. If it doesn't run, then we send an email and blame the person who broke it. If it does work, then we push it up to Azure and it starts running in our staging environment. So that was a really beautiful process, a really clean, smooth process that actually allowed us to deploy our code easily. Now, for the microcontroller side of things, I'm just a normal .NET developer. I've never touched electronics in any way, really. let alone program them or design my own circuits or anything like that. And so it was the same for the rest of my team. We really needed a platform that had the ability for us to easily prototype, easily make changes, easily iterate through different stages. And so, like you can see here with this device, this is the base station that connects to the mesh and also uploads to Azure. There's a lot of different modules that we have screwed in here. And would you believe it that all the code that runs this is literally 60 lines? It's actually 59 lines, but it's just 59 lines of C# code. I know C#. I can write that. And so what I wanted to show you right now is literally how easy it is for someone with no electronic experience to actually build something like this. I have a backup, it's okay. Is it? I'll log into my home PC real quick and I'll show you. Okay. So I'm going to create a new project in Visual Studio. And the cool thing about this is that it's so easy, you don't even really have to know how to program yourself. So the first option we get is to choose a motherboard. There's a whole lot of modules you can buy right now. There's like a whole massive collection of things you can choose. So anything you can imagine that you'd like to build and hook up to the web, it's easy. So I'll just choose this one. And from here, it's nice and visual. I like a GUI. It makes things nice and easy. Let's say we wanted to add some functionality to this application. Some researchers have told us that they want to be able to see the pests that the trap has caught. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to add a button, a camera, and also a network jack. So we have connectivity. So you literally drag and drop the modules. I'm sure we can all do that. It's taking a while. Okay. Okay, it might not be that easy. Here's one I prepared earlier. Okay, so I've dragged and dropped the modules. You simply have to right-click and hit Connect All Modules. And straight away, Visual Studio is telling you how to connect it up even. So I don't have to worry about digital pins, analog pins, resistors, pulling up voltages, anything like that. I just do that. And it gives you these nice little names underneath. That's how you talk to it in the code. So if I was wanting to take a photo with the button, all I have to add is this line that says, listen to when the button's pressed, and then one more line that says, take the photo. And so right away, I've built this program that runs on this sweet little robot device that I can then take out to the forest, and suddenly the researchers have something they can play with. And so for us, that was a huge benefit that we found using this platform called Gadgeteer. The next big, the big cloud that we used was Microsoft Azure. Now, I'm not sure if any of you have had a chance to play with Azure. I hope you have. The thing that was immediately obvious to us was that there are a lot of options. There's so many different options on the left side, so many buttons to push and things like that. For our particular application, we wanted to have a web service or some way to store data. Turns out there's at least 4 or 5 different ways in Azure to receive and store data. And so one of the biggest learning phases for us was working out what the best way to do that was. And so just for you guys, we used all the different methods and have put some of the good and bads down so that you can actually know what's best for your project as well. So the three major players for a simple project where you're just dealing with data, posting it up to the web, and then taking it later, you've got Azure Websites, Azure Mobile Services, and the Azure Service Bus. With Azure Websites, it's great for simple data. If you've built a website using MVC API before, it's all familiar to you. It just runs. You can push existing code straight out there. The biggest benefit for us using this was that the C# code we ran on the microcontroller, that same code runs in Azure. So suddenly we're reusing all this code. We don't have to spend all that time redeveloping things. And so that was really useful for us. But some of the drawbacks were that we wanted to separate the logic and there wasn't a clear separation. The other thing is that microcontrollers, as I learned the hard way, actually have a significantly smaller amount of memory compared to my laptop here. So storing even one HTTP header, the whole thing wouldn't fit. So yeah, HTTP is not going to cut it for us. The next was that we tried was Azure Mobile Services, which is great for receiving complex data. It's easy to set up. You jump on the Azure portal, you click new web service, you click new table, and suddenly it gives you an API that's ready to use. Straight away you can start pushing data into your database. It's done that all for you. It's also event-driven, which means, in our situation, if you can imagine a ranger, this ranger is currently out in the forest servicing some traps. Suddenly, a trap 50 meters away fires, and it's the last shot that trap has. Straight away, that doc ranger gets a notification on the device that says, this trap needs to be checked, you're close by, how about you go and sort it out? I mean, you've got spare supplies in your bag, go for it. And so having it event-driven allowed us to do that. And for the developers, it actually supports CRUD out of the box. You don't have to set anything up. It's all magic. But we encountered some of the same drawbacks that we had with the web services, with websites, and that it was still HTTP. We couldn't fit the HTTP stack on the microcontroller. And also that they restrict the kind of data that you can receive. That you can send back. So you can receive complex data, but you can't send back complex data. Now, the Azure Service Bus is great for everything. Any project you can think of, this can do it. However, it has a steep learning curve if you're not used to queue-based kind of systems. So the benefits are that it's event-driven, which is perfect for us. It supports multiple protocols, which is the biggest thing. Azure released a protocol called AMQP, which actually runs on this. It's lightweight, it's fast, it does exactly what we want. And it still allows us to talk to the web service. Okay? And it's also subscription-based. So that means we're pulling in thousands and thousands of events from different devices, different traps, different sensors all over the forest so we can build the big picture of what's going on. And having it subscription-based means we can have a whole lot of different devices and agents actually processing that data and being able to look after their specific roles. This means that it costs us a lot less because we can do it faster and it doesn't take as long. But like I said before, the drawbacks are that it's harder to set up. And there's actually a fairly steep learning curve involved. So just to wrap up a bit, I have this slide here full of buzzwords. Data drives insight. That's something we discovered working with the Department of Conservation. And we also ran a trial in the Hamilton Gardens where we had traps set out. We had data pushed live into the cloud, and we were able to see in real time how effective that was. What we found was that data drives insight as long as you know what to do with it. And that's where all the intelligence and that stuff comes in. Insight drives impact. So while you might know what's going on in the forest, you need to know what to do next to actually improve that. And when we make enough of those small improvements, we actually drive change. And that's what we're going for. We want positive change in New Zealand forests. We want to save the kiwi. We want to save the native animals. And that's just the start. We're just starting in New Zealand right now. Good Nature are already pushing these traps out around the world. We're going to jump on that. We're going to put these sensors around the world to help other animals as well. And with that positive change, Billy the Kiwi won't have to worry anymore. Thank you. So I actually have a live trap with me. I'm not going to set it off now, but I will have it down in the hub if anyone wants to check that out and to check out the sensors up close. Mohit gave a great session on the Internet of Things yesterday, but that will hopefully be online, all the slides for you to check out. But there's also another session, INO 204, tomorrow about the Internet of Things, which kind of builds on this as well. And there's some contact details for me if you want to check me out. Sweet. In terms of resources, the ones that are really useful for an Internet of Things application would be the TechNet MSDN resources. They have some great videos and tutorials. And as always, don't forget to submit your evals. But thanks.